From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Arts and Lectures Program at the University of California, Santa Barbara, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. We are delighted to be here in Santa Barbara. Santa Barbara is, of course, the first town you get to when you're heading south into Southern California, or, as is more often the case, the last town you arrive at as you attempt to escape. Really, though, it is so beautiful here, so peaceful. It's not so much the real Southern California as the town that's hired to play Southern California on TV. We're very glad to be here. You can join us virtually anyway by calling 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Cindy in Arlington, Texas.
Hey, Cindy, how are things in Arlington?
Well, things are great, but last week I was in Lake Tahoe, California, so things were better there.
Really?
Yes.
You're one of those people who dreams of California?
Yes, just like you.
I know. It's so nice.
Yes, it was.
Cindy, welcome to the show. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a comedian and actor who is currently appearing in Steve Martin's Picasso at the La Peine Agile at the Rubicon Theater in Ventura, California, Paul Provenza.
Hello, Cindy. How are you?
I'm fine, Paul. Hi.
Next, say hello to a deputy editor and a blogger for the Houston Chronicle, Ms. Kiri O'Connor.
Hi, Kiri. Another Texan.
Yes. Hi, Cindy.
And lastly, a comedian who will be appearing next at the Riverside Theater in Vero Beach, Florida on April 3rd, Ms. Paula Poundstone.
Hi, Paula.
Hey, Cindy.
Cindy, welcome to the show. You're going to start us off, of course, with Who's Carl This Time, Carl Castle, as he traditionally does. We'll recreate three quotes from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain two of them, you'll win our prize, Carl Castle's voice, on your home answering machine. Ready to go?
Yes.
All right. Here's your first quote.
I remember landing under sniper fire. There was supposed to be some kind of greeting ceremony at the airport, but instead we just ran with our heads down to get into the vehicles to get to our base.
There was somebody talking in dramatic terms just about a week ago about how she braved gunfire while visiting the Balkans in 1996. Turns out, well, no. Who didn't actually have to run in a serpentine fashion across the tarmac?
Well, I'll try not to misspeak as I say this.
It was Hillary Clinton, of course. The senator has mentioned many times her dangerous trip to Tuzla in Bosnia in 96 as proof of her foreign policy chops. But archival news footage that was broadcast this week shows Mrs. Clinton strolling over a peaceful tarmac, kissing a small, apparently unarmed child. Having an open-air brunch on the airstrip with her Target store logo T-shirt on her. No ill effect.
It actually was Boston where she was assaulted.
I see. Now, as you alluded to, in response to this revelation, Ms. Clinton said that she misspoke when she talked about the snipers. She said, quote, "Occasionally, I am a human being like everybody else," unquote. Occasionally? Like when the full moon is hidden by clouds? What does she mean by this? Anyway, we did some research. We here at Wait, Wait, journalists that we are. Turns out Ms. Clinton has misspoken before, such as when she addressed the students at the University of Pennsylvania just on March 19th.
It's great to be back here at Penn and in Philadelphia. I remember giving the commencement address here some years ago, and I remember landing under sniper fire. There was supposed to be some kind of a greeting ceremony at the airport, but instead we just ran with our heads down to get into the vehicles.
In fairness, though, it is in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I know.
That's a tough
town.
It's
almost more believable there, I think, than... So do you think this is going to hurt her in terms of this revelation that she's been more or less not telling the truth about what happened?
Not as much as the bullets.
No, that's true.
I don't know. 8-year-olds can be brutal. I just want to say. Yeah.
8-year-olds?
Yeah, the 8-year-old.
Oh, the little girl.
Who, like, gave her the flower.
8-year-old Bosnian girl.
Yeah. She did have a hostile look in her eye.
Yeah. Try spending a day with an 8-year-old.
All right. Cindy, you still with us?
Absolutely.
Here's your next quote, and it is, of course, the President of these United States.
A mistake had been made.
That was what the President reportedly told China's President Hu Jintao to explain but not lay blame as to how we ended up shipping what by mistake to Taiwan a little while ago.
Oh, would it have been arms?
It was arms, but it was a particular kind of arms.
Oh. Oh, missiles? Air?
What kind of missiles?
The big kind.
He can't pronounce it.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, those nuclear.
Yeah, nuclear.
Nuclear warheads.
Nuclear warheads. Well, you know how it is. You're packing up your gifts. You've got them all wrapped. They look alike. You stick the wrong labels on. Same thing happened at the Pentagon. So back in 06, Taiwan got the top secret shipment of nuclear bomb parts. And an Air Force base got the complete Girls Gone Wild DVD collection that the Taiwanese president had ordered. The problem, though, is that China still maintains that Taiwan is a Chinese province in rebellion. So they, of course, got very, very upset that somebody would, you know, just by accident, send Taiwan parts for nuclear warheads. The president tried, as you heard, to calm the Chinese leader down. He pointed out things could be worse. The last time President Bush mistakenly sent something to another country, it was an invading army.
I guess if the assembly instructions show up in Tibet, it's all off between us and the Chinese.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the Chinese should toughen up. I know every Chinese deliver I get screwed up.
Yeah, that's true.
I always ask for the extra rice. It's never there.
Cindy, here is your last quote.
It appears he wasn't following proper procedures. Now, we just don't know exactly what procedure wasn't being followed.
That was an official talking about a U.S. Airways pilot who apparently wasn't following procedures when it came to him playing with what during a flight from Denver to Charlotte.
Oh.
Would it have something to do with the microphone?
No.
No?
Even more dangerous than that.
More dangerous than that.
Yeah. The pilots have only recently been allowed to have these, and maybe they shouldn't.
Oh, his gun?
His gun.
Oh.
After 9/11, the FAA allowed pilots to carry loaded handguns in the cockpit. But they have to be locked, and the pilot only gets to use it, of course, in emergencies. So it's a mystery.
Like if he can't get his nuts.
That's why we're not allowed to have guns on the plane.
Anyway, nobody knows why the pilot on last Saturday's U.S. Airways flight 1536 needed to pull out his weapon during a routine descent into Charlotte. Maybe he knew something about Charlotte. We don't.
He thought he was landing in Bosnia.
That's what I mean. He thought the First Lady was on board.
Yeah.
That's all.
Carl, how did Cindy do in our quiz?
Very well, Peter. Cindy, you had 3 correct answers, and I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
Well done.
Oh, that's great. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Cindy. Right now, panel, though, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Paula, scientists say that a 570-million-year-old rope-like sea organism was the first creature on Earth to ever do what?
Look like a rope.
I would think so. Braid itself.
I give you a hint. If the primordial sea is rocking, don't come knocking.
To have sex?
Yes, in fact. Scientists at the University of Edinburgh believe that this 570-million-year-old ropey sea creature was shacking up about 30 million years before anything else on the planet had moved beyond second base. Professor Mary Drosser, who found the fossil, says the creatures had sex all day long because nothing had evolved yet that could eat them and because television had not yet been invented. We, of course, thought the oldest thing that was having sex was Larry King, but, you know.
That's the oldest thing with suspenders.
Exactly.
Yeah, the ropey sea creature wore a belt.
I think this is going to inspire a lot of NPR listeners tonight to turn to one another in bed and say, let's do it like a ropey sea creature.
It's just a fact. Sex starts with ropey sea creatures.
Suddenly, there's libraries where the Book of Knots is being taken off the shelves.
Hey, baby, I used to be a Boy Scout. Yeah.
Entire Navy has had to stand down.
I've got the world on a string, sitting on a rainbow. Got the string around my finger. What a world, what a life, I'm in love.
Thank you so much. Right now it is time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, I'm Jeff West from Glendale, Arizona.
Hey, how are things in Glendale?
Balmy.
Really? It's that beautiful time before the oven turns on and you just spend the rest of the summer
hiding indoors. It gets a little warm.
It gets a little warm. What do you do there?
I'm a project manager for a disability consulting company.
Oh, no. One of those jobs we can't at all make fun of.
Wait, what do you mean?
Four.
Yeah.
Explain what you mean, disability consulting. Maybe we can.
Well, no. I think what we do is quite noble. We do surveys, we do education, we do training to basically facilitate implementation of the ADA, the Americans with Disability Act.
Oh.
See?
Yeah, see?
That's just not funny.
All right.
Under sniper fire.
Under sniper fire. Well, welcome to the show, Jeff.
Great to be here.
We are going to have you play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Jeff's topic?
The great outdoors. What's so great about it?
Yes, for some people, the idea of roughing it has zero appeal. That's why we're so excited about this week's bluff story. Our panelists are going to tell you three tales of people making life in the wilderness. Not so wild. Choose that real story. You've got Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to play?
Yeah, I'm ready.
First, let's hear from Paul Prevenza.
Researchers and animal behavioralists have been trying to come up with a way to prevent hundreds of attacks and confrontations between wild animals and campers and hikers without endangering wildlife or humans. Chemical scents were studied, but no one scent worked for the variety of wildlife encountered. Sounds seemed promising, but high-frequency electronics, as well as recordings of apex predators such as lions, birds of prey, and even poisonous snakes, were not effective with all species of dangerous animals. But Nancy Newfer of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service inadvertently discovered one sound that all living creatures seem to recoil from: Mariah Carey. I played one of her CDs in the lab, Ms. Newfer said, and all the animals cowered in the corners of their cages. The Wildlife Service recommends playing Mariah Carey songs on an endless loop through speakers at campsites and while hiking. Mariah Carey had no comment.
Mariah Carey being used to keep apex predators away from you in the wild. Your next story of someone taming the wilderness comes from Kyrie O'Connor.
At the Mall of America in Minnesota, it's always family camping season indoors. At the new virtual camping center open this week, tucked in between the Libby Lou and the Build-A-Bear workshop, VCC offers camping environments. These are special rooms where families can choose climate, frost or balmy, menacing predator sound effects and shadows, wolf or bear, a glowing gas campfire, and planetarium-style star displays. For $20 more, a fake bear will claw at the tent flap, or a fake tarantula will hide in your sleeping bag. It's better than really camping, said 10-year-old Hannah Dittmer, because there's a real bathroom.
Indoor camping at the Mall of America. Your last story of a not-so-rugged trip to the outdoors comes from Paula Poundstone.
That's the potential sound of future commercial fishermen about to haul in a successful catch. The Marine Biological Laboratory at Woods Hole has received a $270,000 grant to train fish to come when called so they can be netted, iced, sold, and devoured, which heretofore had been considered not an easy deal to talk a fish into. The project began last summer using 6,500 black sea bass. They fed the fish in a circular tank after sounding a tone for 20 seconds three times a day. The fish learned to swim to a feeding zone in the tank and learned to wait patiently, giving no indication of any anxiety about ruining it for fish of all kinds before eating. The process that could make them the laughingstock of the sea for centuries took only 2 weeks. Scientists are hopeful that the process of training them to fillet and batter themselves will be equally cinchy.
All right. Here are your choices, Jeff. From Paul Prevenza, the story of how wildlife people have discovered that it's Mariah Carey that you need to keep yourself safe in the wilderness, not herself in person, just her singing.
Highly plausible.
From Kiri O'Connor, an indoor camping experience with everything controlled from the climate on down at the Mall of America in Minneapolis. Or from Paula Poundstone, a system by which, if it works, we'll be able to fish just by calling little creatures into the net. Which of these is the real story of the wilderness tamed?
I've got to go with the virtual campsite.
Really? At the Mall of America?
That sounds just decadently American.
With the planetarium stars of your choosing?
Thinking I'm going with that, yeah.
All right. Your choice, then, is Curie's story. To bring you the correct answer, we were able to speak to someone involved in this real project.
So far, we haven't gotten the fish to come to Carole King or the Beatles, but they will move to a specific spot in space when they are presented with a tone.
That was Simon Miner. He is a research assistant at Marine Biological Laboratory in Woods Hole, Massachusetts, explaining how he has gotten fish to return to him when they hear a certain tone. So I'm so sorry, Jeff, but Paula had the real answer.
I should have gone with you.
Well, I think in general everyone should go with me when I'm on the show. Certainly a trend I was hoping would start, but that's okay.
No, you didn't win, but you did earn a point for Kiri for her, I thought, very plausible story of the Mall of America. Jeff, thank you so much for playing.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Jeff.
And now the game where we ask notable people about things they didn't bother to notice. It's called Not My Job. Among all the guests we've ever had, today's might be the most comfortable with the quiz format. Fanny Flagg was a fixture in the great game shows of the 60s and 70s, especially Match Game. She has since become an accomplished novelist, most famously with her novel Fried Green Tomatoes at the Whistle Stop Cafe. She has been a proud resident of Santa Barbara, California for 30 years. Fanny Flagg, welcome to Wait, Wait.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you. We're thrilled to have you here.
We're just thrilled to have you here.
And I want to say to all the ladies over 50 that are on the radio and can't see him, Carl, you're a babe.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I would only say, why over 50, Fanny? So, let's go back. You grew up in Birmingham, Alabama.
I did.
How did a nice girl from Birmingham end up in Southern California in the 60s working on Candid Camera, of all things?
Well, I went to New York when I was very young, when I was 18, and I wanted to be a writer, and I was a writer on that show. And then one day, one of the actresses had the flu, and so I started acting on it, and I acted and wrote on it because Alan found out he could pay me the same price.
There you go.
There you go. So from there, I started doing the game shows.
So we saw a clip of the old Candid Camera with you on YouTube, and in this particular one, the gag, the thing that's supposed to just totally shock the poor victims of the prank, is the fact that they're flying in an airplane, and their pilot was you.
That's right.
A woman.
That's right.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, it's just amazing. And I had a little pilot's outfit, and I remember that when the passengers were told, you know, that they were having a female pilot, they were pretty good about it, but the two people that really flipped out were the stewardesses.
Wow.
they said that I won't fly.
Wow.
They were terrified. So anyhow, but it isn't amazing and isn't it wonderful that at that time that was such a rarity, they thought it was a joke, and now it's really happening.
That's
I'm
amazing.
Thrilled about it.
That's
yeah.
Amazing. Did anybody ever get mad? Because you see the reveal, and you're on candid camera, Elephant would say. It's...
Well, you know, it was a wonderful time because everybody wanted to be on television, and that was really the first reality show.
Right.
And people were so delighted to be on television that we rarely, I'll tell you, the only time that people, they didn't get mad, I would watch the man's face and the blood would run out of his face because I would have said, "Oh, smile, you and your wife are on candid camera." And the man standing there would start to absolutely faint, and the young woman with him would sort of back up, and it was not his wife.
Yeah. No.
Because
we did a lot of filming in New York at hotels and hotel lobbies. So
did you get a governor or anything at that point?
Maybe. I don't know.
Now, Fanny, you spent a bunch of years doing different game shows.
Yes, I did.
Back in that period. But the most famous one, when we mention your name, people go, "Oh, yeah, Match Game."
Match Game, yes.
Now, I remember watching Match Game when I was a kid, but I don't know if everybody does. So could you sort of summarize how that worked?
Well, it was just a panel, and you just fill in the blank. And it was sort of like appeal to sixth graders, I suppose.
Yes.
And I was very good at it. But they would say, "Mrs. So-and-so was something about her chocolate blank," and people would, fill in the blank. And it was always sort of double entendre.
Yes. It was, if I remember, and I was in the sixth grade, so I was right in the throat of your demographic. Yeah. It was either sort of breasts, behind, or making whoopee. Wasn't that euphemism?
Yes, but it was great fun because the panel that we had all liked each other. We had Charles Nelson Reilly, Brett Summers, Richard Dawson, and we just had a great time. And it was a great thing to film because we did five shows in one day, and they would take a big lunch break. And at the lunch would be sort of a liquid lunch.
Sure.
And so when they would come back after the third show, we'd look up and Charles's wig was just a little to the right.
I always thought the show was best on Fridays.
Yes.
Yeah. Now you know why.
So, and then somehow you made the transition from performer and game show bon vivant to novelist.
Yes.
And had that, did you just decide to do that? You said you had been a writer.
I wanted to be a writer, and I made the transition because actually it had to do with Santa Barbara. I moved to Santa Barbara in 1975. I was came to Los Angeles, and I was there for about a week, and didn't like it because I couldn't find my way around. And I came up to Santa Barbara, California for lunch, and absolutely fell in love with it and never went back, stayed here the whole time. I didn't even send for my clothes. And Santa Barbara is the most beautiful, the people, the friendliest, the most beautiful. The weather is fantastic.
All right. The weather is perfect. The climate is beautiful. The mountains are beautiful. The ocean is here. Mm-hmm. What's wrong with it? Because there's got to be something wrong with it. I'm from New Jersey. I'm always looking for the flaw. Where are the bodies buried? What's...
In New Jersey.
Yeah. I guess so. That's where they came from. We were paving the parking lots, and they'd shipped in these really tanned bodies to be buried.
Let me answer that question, because I know it's a serious question. When I find out, I will let you know.
Really? Well, Fanny Flagg, we are so delighted to have you with us. We've asked you here to play a game we're calling...
Could I have a guacamole bacon $6 burger, please, a large chocolate milkshake, and a moment of silence for a great American?
That great American would be Carl Karcher, the founder of the Carl's Jr. hamburger chain. He died in January, just a few days shy of his 91st birthday. As a tribute to this innovator in cholesterol delivery technology, we're going to ask you three questions about Carl's Jr. restaurants. Get two right, you'll win our prize. For one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine. Carl, who is Fanny Flagg playing for?
Fanny is playing for Karen Ikegami of Seattle, Washington.
All right. Here's your first question. For a long time, Carl's Jr. was just a West Coast-based hamburger chain, consistently placed third in sales out here behind McDonald's and Burger King. But then the company decided they needed to throw off that dowdy image. As a promotional stunt in 2006, the chain added what to its menu at one of its restaurants? Was it A, the entire cow burger, a 10-meter-wide burger using all the meat from a single Texas-raised black Angus steer? B, the $6,000 combo meal consisting of a burger, fries, and a $6,000 bottle of Bordeaux? Or C, the 3,000-calorie cheese-filled chili potato guiso burger, about which no more need be said?
I think I'm going to go with the one with the Bordeaux.
The Bordeaux, the $6,000 combo meal?
Yeah.
Burger, fries, $6,000 bottle of wine?
Uh-huh.
You're right.
Wow.
Very good. It was offered... It was offered only at the Carl's Branch in the Palms Casino in Las Vegas.
Whoa.
I don't know if anybody went for it. Second question. The company also tried to spice up their ads and their celebrity spokespeople. One Carl's Jr. TV ad aired in the 1990s showed who enjoying a Carl's Jr. burger. Was it A, famed Hollywood madam Heidi Fleiss, B, disgraced junk bond king and felon Michael Milken, or C, one of basketball player Dennis Rodman's many tattoos?
Oh, mercy. I think I'm going to say, I know this sounds peculiar, one of his tattoos.
One of Dennis Rodman's tattoos?
Yes.
You're right again.
Oh, my heavens.
That's amazing. That was well done.
I tell you, boy, eating vegan's good for the brain.
Exactly. The animated commercial showed a star in his scalp coming to life and enjoying a burger.
Whoa.
Which is such a disturbing thought, I want to move on. Now, by far the most controversial Carl's Jr. commercial ever was one from just a few years ago with socialite and amateur porn star Paris Hilton seemingly attempting to copulate with a luxury automobile while washing it before biting down on a burger and calling it, quote, hot. People were outraged. There was a backlash by parents groups, etc. What did Carl's Jr. CEO Andrew Puzder say in response to the critical outcry? Did he say, A, quote, we want to assure the burger-buying public that there is little to no chance you will ever encounter Miss Hilton in a Carl's Jr. restaurant, unquote. B, quote, I don't know. I find a beautiful woman washing a car much less creepy than that clown who's always hanging around with those kids. Or C, quote, get a life.
Oh, I think it's either get a life or the creepy clown, and it's just too funny. And even if I'm wrong, I have to go with the creepy clown.
Creepy clown?
Yeah.
Sad it was get a life, I'm
afraid. Oh!
But he did go on to say, quote, this isn't Janet Jackson. There's no nipple in this. There is no nudity. There are no sex acts. It's a beautiful model in a swimsuit washing a car. Carl, how did Fanny Flagg do in our quiz?
Fanny had two correct answers, Peter, so she wins our prize for carrot
cake. Well
done.
Fanny Flagg is a beloved author of Fried Green Tomatoes and many other works. She's been an actress, a game show star. She is a proud resident of Santa Barbara, California. Fanny Flagg, thank you so much for joining us today.
When it's least expected, you're elected, you're the star today.
In just a minute, the news in five lines of rhyming verse. If you'd like to play the Listener Limerick Challenge, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Paul, listen as Carl and I recreate an interview shown on TV in New York earlier this week. I will take the role of investigative reporter Dominic Carter. Marijuana?
Yes.
Cocaine?
Yes.
You've used cocaine?
I'd say I was about 22, 23. I tried it a few times, yes.
So who continued his confessional tour of New York State this week?
Would that be Barack Obama?
No.
Well, then I'm not voting for him. Whoever it is can't even hold a candle to Elliot Spitzer.
That's true. Well, actually, that's kind of the point. He's trying not to hold a candle to Elliot. He's trying to say, as far as I went, I didn't go as far as Elliot Spitzer.
Is this Patterson?
It is. It's David Patterson,
right.
The new governor of New York.
Look at me pulling it out.
We understand the appeal of getting things off your chest, but this is getting silly. Last week, during his first official press conference, Newly installed New York Governor David Paterson admitted to multiple extramarital affairs. This week, drug use. Basically, the governor admitted to ingesting every drug from black tar heroin to Flintstones vitamins. Next week, according to his schedule, he's planning on copping to illegal gambling, arms dealing, dumping toxic waste into the Hudson, and kidnapping the Lindbergh baby. Kiri, the state of Massachusetts has 114 schools that are labeled as underperforming. So according to the Boston Globe, the State Board of Education, working on the problem of these underperforming schools, spent three meetings trying to figure out what?
Oh, dear. To figure out what underperforming means?
Close. They know what it means. You don't want to make them feel bad.
Oh, how to break it to them?
You're very close.
I'm very close, but not close enough.
It's not breaking it to them. It's like letting everybody else know. They're concerned about how to do that.
How to announce this? How to do the publicity? How to do the press release?
Close. Well, I think I'll just give it to you because you're so close. They're looking for a nicer term than
underperforming. I'm sorry.
It seems so harsh.
Underperforming is about as nice as it gets when you're underperforming.
Isn't underperforming a nice word for crappy?
Well, yeah. There.
Yeah, or failed, or like really screwing up.
Randolph School Chairman Larry Azar, Randolph being a town in Massachusetts, the school chairman there said, when schools are labeled as underachieving, I don't see what it serves other than to just call them out, which we thought was the point. The Board of Ed in Massachusetts is now considering other options for failing schools, including Priority 1, special schools, very, very special schools, and doing their gosh darn best, just like the government of Iraq.
What about teaching unabled?
You know, those are the ones that the real estate agent says, you know, you say, is this a good school? You say, good enough for your kids.
Paul, we are so proud this week that our favorite stupid criminal story happened in our hometown of Chicago. An 18-year-old man attempted to rob a muffler shop at gunpoint, but was told that the safe was locked and only the manager, who was not there, could open it. So what did he do?
When the manager gets here, tell him to call me so I can come and rob the safe.
That's exactly what he did. He gave them his cell phone number.
It's the Chicago way.
It is, it is. He gave him his cell phone number because he had some errands to run. He didn't want to be tied to the phone at home. And he said, call me when the guy gets back and pick this up, you know.
That muffler shop is known for their customer service.
It's true, right. So the guys in the shop called 911 instead, and then the robber, you know, then the robber got the call. Hey, the manager's back, so, you know, come over now. He immediately returned, and he was somewhat surprised, we assumed, to find some different-looking guys standing around the muffler shop. Well, no matter. So he started waving his gun around, and the plainclothes cops shot him in the leg. He's fine, though. He says he knows what he did wrong. He should have just asked them to text him. Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can send an email to waitwait@npr.org. You can also go to our website at waitwait.npr.org, where you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Auditorium in Chicago, or download the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me podcast for your computer or MP3 player. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Jane Trancho from Bainbridge Island, Washington.
Well, it's beautiful across the bay there from Seattle, right?
It is.
Oh, it's great there. Do you commute by ferry?
I do. I take the ferry every day to work.
I've always wanted to commute by boat. Do you get stuck in boat jams?
You know, there's rarely actually ice floes on the Puget Sound, so it's usually pretty smooth sailing.
Oh, that's good. Well, welcome to the show, Jane. Carl Castle will now read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. Your job, of course, fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two of the limericks. If you do, you will be a winner. Ready to play?
I'm ready.
All right, here is your first limerick.
We marketers do what we're able, and we mark all of you with a label. Our info we get from the box on your set. See, we're watching the viewers of...
cable.
Exactly right. Ever looked at the remote sitting dozens of inches away from your hand and said to yourself, why do I have to work so hard? Why can't the stupid TV just know what I want to watch? Well, just wait. Comcast is working on new technology that will put a camera in your cable box to watch and identify the people in the room. The camera would recognize different family members by their body type and cater to their whims accordingly, which is great, I guess. Unless you lose some weight and walk in, and the next thing you know, you're watching your wife's soap operas. But we think what's going to happen is this will be around for a while, and then, like, you know, some cable station will announce its fall season, which is basically your last Friday nights.
Would it be programmed into it?
No, it would know. It would know you. It would recognize you by looking at you and say, "Oh, it's Paula. Paula likes to watch X, Y, and Z."
So the television is now watching us.
Exactly right.
I'm sorry.
Would my television know I don't get cable?
I think you're pretty safe then.
Here is your next limerick.
When creatively I start to grapple, like Surratt when he learned how to dapple, I peek at my Mac and it gently winks back. I'm inspired by the logo, the...
Apple.
Right. Researchers at Duke University found that showing the Apple logo to test subjects for 30 milliseconds, made the viewers much more creative when it came to a problem-solving challenge than subjects who had seen the IBM logo subliminally, 15 to 30% more creative, in fact. Also, subjects who saw a Disney logo were much more honest in answering true-false questions than subjects who'd seen an E! Entertainment Channel logo.
Wow.
This is all true. Isn't that weird?
Who commissioned the study?
Disney and Apple.
That would be my guess. The study, it doesn't show that, like, Apple makes you more creative. It does show, however, the power of advertisements. It shows that, you know, logos should be used with caution. It was demonstrated most dramatically by the test subjects who were shown the logo for the federal agency FEMA and instantly destroyed an American city. Just...
What is that logo, Peter?
It's a person with water up to their eyeball and a look of panic is what it is. Here's your last limerick.
Ladies, yes, marriage gets struggly. Career, family, health, rather juggly. He won't make you wealthy, but happy and healthy. A man who is really quite...
ugly.
Yes! The psychologist from the University of Tennessee urged beauties to marry beasts because they're more likely to provide emotional support for you than George Clooney or Dr. McDreamy. Professor Jim McNulty says the reasons are evolutionary. Men with wives who are out of their league are less likely to stray, and men who feel they could do better will try to do so. Or as the scientists themselves put it, they're looking for, quote, more short-term mating opportunities, unquote. McNulty urged really hot women to consider less hot guys, especially, for example, psychologists working at the University of Tennessee. Carl, how did Jane do in our quiz?
Well, you can't do better, Peter. Jane had 3 correct answers, so Jane, you win our prize.
Jeez.
Congratulations, Jane.
Thank you.
Thanks for playing.
Just a little change. Small to say the least, both a little scared, neither one prepared. Beauty and the Beast.
Now it's time to move on quickly to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Kerry O'Connor has the lead, Peter. She has 3 points. Paul Provenza and Paula Poundstone each has 2 points, and they're tied for second.
All right, we have flipped a coin. Paula has elected to go second, so Paul, you're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill-in-the-blank. Kwame Kilpatrick, the mayor of blank, was indicted for perjury and obstruction of justice.
Dublin.
No, Detroit.
That's what I meant.
Having failed in his run for the presidency, blank is planning on returning to acting on TV and in movies.
Fred Thompson.
Right. Ford Motor Company sold luxury automotive giants Jaguar and Land Rover to the Indian firm blank.
Sanjay.
Tata Motors. With a 5-minute appearance in the sitcom How I Met Your Mother, blank began her latest comeback.
Britney Spears.
Yes. Two men near Calgary, Alberta sparked a huge grass fire when their war against blanks went awry.
Gophers.
Yes. Months after a campaign by fans saved it from cancellation, CBS recanceled the nuclear war drama blank.
24. No.
No. Jericho.
That's what
hoping to maintain its dominance in the picture editing market, Adobe announced it would begin offering a free online version of blank.
Photoshop.
Right. A New York man who was arrested for speeding explained that he lost control of his car because he blanked.
Was high.
No, because he was having difficulty dunking his Oreo in his milk. Justin Von Coomer was dunking his Oreo in a cup of milk while driving. It slipped. It fell in. Oh, no. There's one thing he cannot stand. It is the soggy Oreo. So, he was trying to fish the Oreo out of his drink and drive the car when he attracted the attention of police. The arresting officer, a diehard twist-apart and lick man, was not sympathetic, cited him for speeding. Carl, how did Paul do on our quiz?
Paul had 4 correct answers for 8 more points. He now has 10 points, and Paul has taken the lead.
Well done. All right. Paula, you're up next. Ready?
Yeah.
Fill in the blank. This week, the Justice Department approved a merger between XM Satellite Radio and blank.
I have no idea.
Sirius Radio. U.S. authorities indicted the governor of blank in a corruption scandal connected to campaign finance.
No idea.
Puerto Rico. Less than 2 weeks after a similar accident in New York, a blank collapsed in a building in Miami.
A blank collapsed?
Yes.
On a building?
Yes.
What can collapse on a building? A ceiling?
No, a crane, a construction crane.
Oh, right.
The FBI is investigating whether a parachute found in the woods of Washington State may be the one used by infamous skyjacker blank.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, Fred Thompson. I knew all of his.
D.B. Cooper, a Beaumont, Texas woman pulled a gun on 2 furniture delivery men because they didn't blank.
Bring it in the house.
No, take off their shoes when entering her house. A 2-year-old girl in India was rescued after spending 27 hours in a blank.
A gumball machine.
A well. After a brief romance with a live swan, Petra the black swan in Germany got dumped and has reunited with her former love, a blank.
Ropey undersea creature.
No, though they are tempting and attractive. No, with her former love, a swan-shaped paddle boat. Back to our continuing coverage of Petra, the love-addled swan, as we reported last week. After years of living with a swan-shaped paddle boat, Petra finally found love with Paul, an actual boy swan. But then Paul dumped Petra. He was tired of being asked to just bob in the water like her other boyfriend used to do. The Munster Zoo announced that to help heal her broken heart, it had retrieved the swan boat out of storage, and it and Petra were back together. A little older, a little wiser, and in the boat's case, needing some new fiberglass. Carl, how did Paula do on our quiz?
Paula was perfect. No correct answers.
That was amazing.
So she still has 2 points, and Paul Provenza has 10 points and still has the lead.
All right, then. So, Carl, how many does Kiri need to win?
4 correct answers, Peter.
All right. Kiri, this is for the game. Fill in the blank. The latest poll by American Research Group finds that blank's approval rating has climbed from 19% to 24%.
Congress?
George W. Bush. With record drops in Miami, Las Vegas, and other markets, new data showed that the price of a blank in the U.S. fell by 10% in January.
House.
Right. In Britain, for a 2-day state visit, blank said he was moved by the friendly reception given to his new wife, Carla Bruni.
Nicolas Sarkozy.
Yes, in the hopes of improving the chances of his presidential campaign, blank announced that he was leaving the Democratic Party to join the Libertarian Party.
Ah, Mike Gravel.
Right, a Florida thief was easy to catch after his attempted carjacking because he could not blank.
Drive.
Drive a stick shift. Scientists cited rapid climate change as a reason a large chunk of the Wilkins ice shelf in blank collapsed this week.
Antarctica.
Right, best known for his television roles and his debut performance in the film Kiss of Death. Blank died at age 93.
Richard Widmark.
Right. A woman in Elyria, Ohio, said that God answered her prayers for a new van by giving her blanks that she can sell on eBay.
Cheetos shaped like something.
So close. Fish sticks frozen in the shape of a crucifix.
Fish sticks are always frozen in the shape of a box.
Just because it happens every day.
That's why the devout have little fish on the back of their cars.
Man.
Ms. Victoria Landis said, quote, I went to cook them one day, and I poured them on the pan, and there were these three kind of fused together in a way that made three mini crosses, unquote. Landis says she couldn't stomach eating the crosses. She logged onto her eBay account. She sold those for $79. She still has high hopes for her weeping Mother of God Hot Pocket. Carl, did Kiri do well enough to win?
She needed four correct answers. Kiri had five correct answers. So with 13 points, Kiri O'Connor is this week's champion.
Well done, Kiri.
No, I was kind of underperforming.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists, having sent nuclear weapon parts to Taiwan, what will be the next thing the U.S. mistakenly sends to the wrong country? But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations. And the members of the National Association of Realtors, working on behalf of America's residential and commercial property owners, on the web at realtor.com. The Annenberg Foundation, advancing public well-being through improved communication, on the web at annenbergfoundation.org. And the Wallace Foundation, supporting ideas, sharing solutions, expanding opportunities, on the web at wallacefoundation.org. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, executive producer. Thanks also to David Johnson, IA Local 442, and the rest of the crew at the Granada Theater in beautiful Santa Barbara. B.J. Lederman composed our theme. Our program is directed by Melody Kramer, produced by Mike Danforth and Emily Ecton. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Rod Abid. Now, panel, what will the U.S. next send by mistake to the wrong country? Paula Poundstone.
Dick Cheney.
Kiri O'Connor.
We accidentally export to Iran the only thing left that we have worth more than a bucket of warm spit, Hannah Montana.
And Paul Prevenza.
Our Constitution, because we're not using it anyway.
Well, panel, if the U.S. sends any of those things to any of those countries, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you so much, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Paula Poundstone, Kiri O'Connor, and Paul Prevenza. Thanks to Heather Silva, Celesta Balecci, Kathy Oliverson, and everyone at UC Santa Barbara. Thanks to our audience here at the Granada Theater. Yes, and thanks to you all for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.